Yo, Black Lives Matter, right?
I'm just looking for a job.
Jobs are for capitalist slaves.
It's with the blue hair from Kid.
I don't answer the patriarchy.
Why do you hate men so much?
Because, like, all men are sexist pigs. And deserve to die!
Next!
What do you love the most?
Beer, beef, and Jesus.
Next!
Why are most blacks so immoral?
I know you didn't just say that.
Where are you going? Hey! Why do you still live with your parents?
No platform for fascists! No platform for fascists! No platform for fascists!
If you're so proud of Mexico, then why are you still here? This is ridiculous. There's gotta be a better way to find guests. If you strongly disagree with me, and you are a good debater, and if you live in the LA area and would like to be on the Fall Estate, go to thefallestate.tv.
Come join us on the Fall Estate!
Welcome to the Fall Estate. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. My guest has helped countless celebrities and regular people to examine their problem. And I have with me the one, the only, Dr. Drew. You know, I never knew your name. Your last name was Pinsky.
There it is.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's the host of Dr. Drew Midday Live on 790 KBC Radio. He is also the host of various podcasts, including the Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Dr. Drew show, This Life, and the show, Teen Moms OG Reunion on MTV. What time do you get up in the morning?
Depends on the day.
Man.
This morning, pretty early.
I really appreciate you coming.
My privilege.
So how do you have time to do all these things? I was thinking this last night when
you know prepared. When I you know it looks like workaholism now, but I actually am. I've been severely workaholic, where I would get up at 5:30 in the morning. I struggled to get home by 10 at night, and I was when I was full time in my practice, I was doing an inpatient medical practice, some of it critical care, an outpatient medical practice. Then I was managing medical patients in a psychiatric hospital, and I was running a psychiatric drug unit, alcohol
drug
unit.
That's amazing.
That was crazy. That was truly crazy. And everything else has felt like a vacation since.
So, how did you become a workaholic?
It's a simple question with a complex answer. When I decided I wanted to be a physician, it was sort of late in college, and I got into it, and I was like really grateful to be doing it.
Yeah.
And then my dad was a physician, my uncle was a physician. I got caught into this idea that you had to be the guy, you had to be there all the time for your patients, no matter what. And I got high off it, I think.
Oh.
And I just was so grateful to be doing it. I enjoyed it so much, and for me, making a difference is so important, rewarding, what makes life worthwhile.
Yes.
I got high on it. I indulged in it. So I finally balanced out a little bit of therapy, and I figured it out.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide, you know, I'm tired of being a medical doctor. I want to help people with their personal issues in life.
Well, it's always been, I'm as a medical doctor, I use all that to help people. Those are not distinct things. And because I ran an alcohol and drug unit all those years, I sat at the crossroads of medicine, psychiatry, psychology, family therapies, anthropology. I mean, you had to really do a good job with addiction and alcoholism. You have to master everything.
Yes.
So that's where I got good at all these different sort of, I don't want to call them psychological because I'm not a psychologist, but these sort of behavioral health interventions.
I know that you work on a VH1 show with celebrity, celebrity rehab and things like that. Is there like a number one cause for people to be addicted to things? People, places, and things.
Right. So I think we live in a spiritual vacuum right now. It's no mystery to you, right?
Right.
You see it the way I see it. There's a problem out there.
Right.
And addiction is one of the manifestations. It is, you know, you have to have a certain genetic makeup to become an addict, though because of all these powerful medications we've been exposing people to, we made addicts of people who never would have been addicts.
That's right.
So that gene, that genetic predilection may be mild or severe. We got them all now. We got them all hooked. And not everyone that has that gene, you know, genes aren't destiny, right? It's not because you have the gene you get addiction. It's because you start up and you're needing to solve a problem. And fundamentally, the individual experiences that problem as a sense of emptiness and dysregulation, right? I can't feel good in my own skin, whatever that means to that person. A void, whatever. And if you were to point at one thing, it would be childhood trauma.
Yes.
So sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, domestic violence, all the stuff that we all talk about. I think we've been through an epidemic of this. I really do.
I don't 100%.
I don't think it's been like this. I think since the 60s, it's been on.
Yes.
And we have to do something about it. I think a lot of the tribalism and the BS we're seeing in politics is another manifestation of this, because people are sort of swimming in their identity and sort of hook on to something, and now they look to the group for their identity, and the group is not healthy, and off they go and filling the void that way, right?
Yep.
The spiritual problem, it's not simple. It's complicated. I don't think the solutions are simple, or we'd already be there. But I think you and I would probably see the same basic core at issue here. I see it manifesting through addiction, unhappiness, bad relationships. I'm sure you see it in many different ways as well.
At one time, I smoked pot. You ever smoke pot?
Yeah.
Oh, good. What kind of? No.
But I didn't like it. I think it gave me panic attacks.
It gave me that too. So, really.
But when my patients who were having trouble stopping were telling me when they described what it was like the first time they got high, the first time really got high from it, they go, "Oh, I loved it." I go, "You loved it." That's not my experience.
Right.
That's why I knew there was a different biology for some people. They biologically respond to it differently.
Yeah.
They freaking love it.
I would get high on pot and I couldn't function around people because I wasn't for sure how I sound, how I look.
You have social anxiety for pot.
I would be on the way to the club with my friends and they would pat the joint. I'm like, "You don't want to give it to me."
Because I'll ruin the night.
Right. And I would tell them that. So they would pass it to me. By the time we get to the club, I could not go in. And they get angry and have to take you back home.
Absolutely. You mean we got the same biology, I think.
That's right. But you know what happened? I had anger at that time. Hmm. You know, I was a young man. I had anger. And I resented my mother who tried to turn me away from my father. Because the worst thing that can happen is to turn children away from their fathers.
Well, any kind of splitting like that.
Yeah.
Splitting, because the child feels the split.
Absolutely. Because of the spiritual connection. But long story short, I forgave my mother for what she did to me. And once I forgave her, God forgave me. And I returned to my father. Then the desires that I had for a loss of sex and pot and all that disappeared because I no longer had the conflict. I had perfect peace. So I didn't need it anymore. Isn't that simple way of overcoming that? Isn't that a simple way?
It is. You know, forgiveness, gratitude, these are very, very powerful things. People have trouble getting to them on a deep level. For whatever reason, you were given that capacity where you could really do it on your own deeply. Did you have somebody?
Well, God allowed me to see because I asked him to let me see myself.
Was it strictly a relationship with God or was there another human helping you?
No one helping me.
Because usually it requires another human.
I heard someone say you need to forgive if you have anger. So I asked God to let me see.
Did that person, was that somebody you respected? Or
I didn't even know the person. I just happened to hear it at the time. I was flipping through the radio, and I heard him say that. Mm-hmm. So I asked God to let me see myself, and he allowed me to see that I had this anger. And anger is of your father, the devil, right? So it separated me from God, the tree of life. Yeah. And so I went and forgave because in the scriptures it says, before you enter into the kingdom of heaven, you must forgive. So I went and forgave, and at an instant, he freed me.
I have no doubt that was your experience, because I've seen that. Now here's my sense of it. I call it seeing yourself through a new pair of glasses, right? You saw yourself for real.
Right.
So you saw yourself.
Yeah.
And my patients have those moments where they literally, they have all kinds of horrible things happen, and one day they look in the mirror and they see themselves.
Yes.
And so how do you get people to that moment, right? I believe religious faith has a role to play. I'm not an expert in it. I just believe it.
Yes.
And so,
but you're right about that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's somehow for some people that can help you see with a new pair of glasses. The other for me is another human being, that you actually allow in proximity, in close, in an intimate contact, not romantic contact, just closeness, and let that person see you. And when you see them seeing you, you can sometimes see yourself. And that's a therapist, that's a good friend. And usually what I tell people is, hang out with somebody you wouldn't normally hang with.
Yeah.
But somebody you can trust and you really admire their perceptive abilities. And just listen to them. Listen to what they see in you.
You make an interesting point, because once you can see what's going on, seeing it causes you to overcome.
Yeah,
the problem is when you're in denial, and you're not admitting, then you can't overcome.
And denial is a very complex process, right?
Yes.
It's almost delusional, right?
It is delusional.
Yeah, it's resistance, it's lack of insight, it's denial, it's all these things. But whatever it is, you're not seeing it. You're not seeing yourself.
Right.
And most people, when they see themselves, they want to change.
Yes.
Then they're ready for change. Now, some people can, some people can't. And we've got to be realistic about this.
Right.
Now, some people need help. Some people.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They need some understanding.
Yeah, and I just got this feeling. I'm so glad you're onto this, because I just feel like the religious community hasn't quite stepped up to the, or we haven't stepped up to the religious
they
possibilities.
Have not. Yeah. 100%
have not. And same thing on my medical side. We get it. We understand what they need. We're not doing it. They don't get it. There's no access. It's just a mess.
It's
a mess.
It really is.
It's a shame.
I wanted to, and speaking of the drug thing, the opioid situation, is that due to spiritual traumas and the fact that it's so available now and stuff like that, but the people who are taking it and becoming addicted to it, is that due to some sort of spiritual trauma?
Yes. Okay. Very powerful, very distributed. Yes, spiritual trauma. But we're also, my profession has perpetrated a bad thing.
Meaning what?
Meaning we went through this period where whenever an ideology captures a group, I don't care who it is, whether it's a political group or a medical group, watch out, it hurts people.
Yeah.
So an ideology swept through my profession, which was pain is what the patient says it is, it's as important as the fifth vital sign, and it has to be controlled with large amounts of opiates, or you're not only practicing malpractice, you're doing a criminal act of negligence. And doctors got scared, they started pouring stuff onto patients, and they started addicting people above and beyond those who had a spiritual problem.
Yeah.
So we got all the ones with a spiritual problem, and we even got more.
Amazing.
A mess, a freaking mess. And I've been complaining about it for 15 years. And I was told to shut up, I was told I was a dinosaur, I was told that I was interested in human suffering, and I was like, no. If this stuff worked and we're safe, of course I'd advocate for it. It's a catastrophe. And there's a footage of me talking to Larry King right after Heath Ledger died. That was, what, 2002 or something?
Yes.
And me going, you don't understand. There's a tsunami coming, and it's going to wash over this country. I'm saying this because I could see it. I could see it coming.
Why were they trying to stop me? Was it because they could see, or
it's because
did they want to make the money?
There was motivation, right? But they thought they were doing good. It was an ideology. It was almost a religious belief that this is the right way. And it begged no alternative. It's what's happening now in politics and stuff, too. People can't listen to each other.
Yeah.
You got to listen. Science is about disproving things. That's what science is. It's not about proving things. It's about disproving things. You always have to be skeptical and assessing and looking at all your assumptions about everything.
Right.
Even what we're saying.
That's right.
People should evaluate us very critically.
I want to know this about you, because you're interesting. What type of person are you? Who are you? How do you see yourself? And what do you want?
I want security for my kids. I want them to, because my wants and change of time, right?
Yeah.
Right now, I want security for my kids. I want them to thrive in their work. I want them to have successful relationships.
And
they're in that late 20s thing where they've got to get their crap together.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So I want that. I want that. And unfortunately, because I'm sort of a controlling person, I'm like making sure I've got enough so I can give to them, so I got enough for them, blah, 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 blah. These kinds of anxieties about that. I'm an anxious person.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a perfectionistic person, but I've let go of some of that. I'm overly emotional. Like I'm too sensitive.
Amazing.
It affects my ability. It's an asset, like in situations like this.
Right.
But in terms of getting stuff done, it can be a bit of a get in the way.
How did you become that way?
I'm a kind of a trauma survivor too, right? Much like you, I had some issues with the parents,
yeah.
And mother was sort of abusive, and dad unavailable and narcissistic, and not bad people, just
injured me. Yeah, that's right.
Didn't mean to.
They don't mean to. Just that they don't know. They don't realize what they're doing.
Right, and like you, I've forgiven and processed.
Went to your mother?
No, she was already. Well, my mother. I couldn't. She was not open to it.
Oh, she was
still not open to it. She has a certain kind of personality. And I just accepted that and decided that that relationship was about me being a good son, not me getting anything from my mother.
Right. That's right.
That's the cards. That's
amazing.
What I got dealt.
Prior to forgiving my mother, I was lost in my imagination a lot. I was very emotional. I had doubt and fear and worry. I couldn't deal with women in the right way.
Because
as you know, you become like whomever you're angry at. Mm-hmm. So once, as a kid, I became angry at my mother. I lost my identity and took on her personality.
Oh, boy.
Because you become like who you are angry at. So, and I dealt with women in a weak way. If I had to break up with one, I would have to have another one waiting in the wings.
Sure, well, a lot of people do that.
Because I couldn't live without them or with them, right?
A lot of people do that.
But once I forgave her, then God took away her identity and gave me back myself, and now I have perfect peace.
That's great.
I have no doubt, no fear, no worries. I realize that my battle is a spiritual battle, has nothing to do with color, male or female. It's either right
people.
Or wrong.
We're all just people.
And I have that perfect peace. So by forgiving.
Preach.
And so Kanye West.
Yeah,
you know
hang
I mean,
on some. Right? But I want to finish before we get to Kanye, which seems like a different place.
It's about mental illness, but go ahead.
Very quickly, I had lots of therapy. Lots and lots and lots of therapy, too.
So
psychotherapy for years and years and years and years. And it was extremely effective for me, and extremely. Like one of the most important things I ever did. And it's benefited me being able to help other people.
Right.
It's created a capacity that I did not have before.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of the reasons motivated me to do so much therapy. I felt like it could build an instrument that could be helpful in my work, which it was. Kanye, bipolar disorder.
Let me tell you this, a little bit to that.
Yeah.
What's amazing for me, once I saw it was the anger that was holding me back and making me all crazy, and I forgave, at an instant, I was free.
It happens in a moment of change.
And on my radio and TV show and in my counseling sessions, I tell people to go and forgive, especially their mothers, because most people don't resent their father. They yearn for the father.
Well, they idealize the absent dad, and they blame the mom.
Yeah, and when they go to the mother, they're shaking in the boots. But when they do it, right away, they're free.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing from men and women around the world, of all races, they've been like lost in that emotion, lost in fear and doubt. But they go and face, and most of the time it's the mother, sometimes the fathers.
Yeah.
But they forgive the mothers, and right away their lives change. And that add to the spiritual issue. Mm. It's all about the spirit
it's all together, not the physical.
Kanye West was accused of being mentally ill when he came out to support the Great White Hope back in 2016. And you know who the Great White Hope is.
Sure, sure.
President Trump, right? Do you believe that he was mentally ill?
Well, he is.
At any point?
Well, he has said, I'm bipolar. I have bipolar disorder, right? That's what
he
has.
Oh, he did? I didn't know that.
You know, he's on the record with bipolar.
Oh, okay.
And the story apparently is his mom used to help him manage his medication, and when she died, he sort of went into denial about it and stopped taking his meds and got into trouble. Now he's back lined up again, even though he has some issues with it. That doesn't affect what you believe or think so much.
Oh, okay.
In other words, that doesn't create your political persuasion or your political belief.
It doesn't cause you to leave the Democrat and go to the Republican.
It makes you more enthusiastic about whatever you believe, but it doesn't change your belief system so much. I mean, not unless you're really sick, but just in your normal swings, you're uncomfortable, but you still have your own belief systems.
Yeah. So. What do you think of Kanye supporting the Great White Hope, President Trump?
I'm agnostic on a lot of stuff, right? And so I'm right in the middle on everything. And so my thing is about, hey, man, can't we all just, like, let's get in the tent together here? So the fact that, to me, that looks like somebody pulling more people into the tent, I like it. I like it. I don't care who we support, as long as it's more people in the tent getting together, less lines, less divisions, less acrimony. I'm sick of that. I'm sick of it. So if, you know, if him coming in the tent and what's the woman that's on, Camille, she's an African-American woman on Fox all the time. Very smart woman. West?
Owens.
Yeah, I think.
What's her first name?
And I don't agree with everything. Candace Owens. And guess what? I don't agree with everything she says.
Right.
But I just like seeing people just getting together. Just get together. Get there on both sides. Come on. It's good going.
Hear all opinions. Yeah. Is it possible for good to get along with evil?
That is a philosophical question I've never contemplated. I'm going to say yes, but the risk is evil has its own designs, and so good can get manipulated by evil.
That's right.
But I do believe they can get along, and I believe evil can be dampened by getting along with good. How about that?
I see your point. Get along, but not necessarily agree.
Not necessarily agree.
Right.
You have to agree. You have to agree. None of us have to agree.
That's right.
We got to get used to that. Yeah. That's the thing we're having trouble with right now. It's like we have to all agree on the same.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, God, no.
What do you think of the backlash that Kanye gets from the black community? Because in the black community, I don't know if you know this, you are not allowed to be an individual. You must be on the plantation.
Well, that's what Candace Owens keeps saying, and I like that. I like that she's saying think for yourself, think for yourself, think for yourself. I wish more African Americans would be in the middle with me. I want them to be in the middle. Get back in the middle, and let's just all think about reframing everything. Let's just think for yourself. That's what Kanye was saying, was think for yourself.
But you're not allowed to do that. I've been called Uncle Tom, sellout, the N-word. I've been called the N-word so many times. I'm thinking of changing my middle name from Jesse Lee Peterson to Jesse N. Peterson from the black community because I escaped the plantation, the Democratic plantation. And right away, the blacks came after me like 90 going north. And I didn't know that was going to happen until I switched over.
Come back. Come out in the middle with me. It's a little safer. You can judge both sides then.
Yeah. But you're not allowed to be a free thinker in the black community. It's just no.
That breaks my heart. But I have no business having an opinion, frankly.
It's easier to be a member of the KKK to be a free thinking black person.
Well, you understand that it seems to me, again, I have no business speaking on behalf of anybody.
But you do.
But let me just say.
You have a right to speak.
Oh, I have a right to speak.
You love all people.
I do.
So if the blacks are wrong and you see that they're wrong, in your love, you wake them up before they fall off the bridge.
Well, but here's
isn't that true?
Yes, but here's what they're seeing. They're seeing a party that if you were to check the registrations of people that are a problem to the black community, you're more likely to find an R than a D.
Why is that?
In those people. It's just the way it is.
But it's not real.
And I understand that's not the party.
Right.
But that's
their minds.
No, I think it's real. And I think the party needs to deal with that. I think that's the problem. The party
what is it that
with,
they need to deal with?
The deal Republican with the extreme, Party. They're extremes. The left needs to deal with extremes too. But the right extremes are a little more visible, a little more obvious, a little more problematic. And they should be dealt with.
Just one extreme. Give me one extreme from the Republican Party itself. One is
they're associated with racists. People like white supremacists, people like that, usually have an R. If they're not going to be a D, it's going to be an R on their registration form. And I think that should be addressed somehow because until you address I think the left needs to deal with their extreme people too.
Antifa really is an example.
Absolutely. They need to deal with that. Yeah. That kind of aggression and violence is no good. There's no plan. None of these things have any. They're not American. Neither of them really belong. At the table right now, and they need to, if they want to come to the table, they need to let all the anger and aggression go.
You can disagree with me with this, and we'll still be tight.
Yeah. All right, because we can disagree.
So I'm about to say, the blacks are seeing the Republican platform in the wrong way.
The which?
The Republican platform.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as white supremacy. It's either right or wrong, good or evil. And you can find anger in all cultures and all races
totally
of people.
I completely agree.
Family members turn against each other. So it's not about the race. It's about the character. The person just mad,
And I've seen the the so-called, you know, skinheads and stuff, I get to see them in recovery when they recover, and they are mortified about the way they were. Just the way you're disturbed about how you used to think.
Yes.
Right? Same thing. When you get the cloak off of evil, if you whatever however you want
it's
to characterize
evil.
It, there's a person in there, and still the same person as you or I. But right now, somehow that's got to be dealt with.
So can we stop calling it racism, sexism, homophobiaism, Islamophobiaism? It right or wrong. It's wrong to hate. It's wrong to, you know.
I'd like to see that, yeah.
And that way we could solve the problems. If we solve them spiritual issues rather than physical issues, we're never going to resolve it. But if you and I call it what it is, it will get people to thinking, and then the problem will start to resolve.
I kind of like that, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I kind of like that.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, because people need a simple way to approach these complex problems.
Look how long, I grew up on a plantation in Alabama, under the Jim Crow laws, for whites only signs, for not one time did I hear the word racism. I worked the plantation, I worked the field. You ever pick cotton?
No, it's got to be
break not,
your hand. It's horrible, right?
Yeah.
It's like picking
you have
cactus.
Not lived. But not one time. My great-grandfather was killed in his bed by a bunch of white people who didn't want him to hire another black person. They had fire from another plantation.
How do you not have resentment? How do you let
because
it go?
Because we were taught not to hate, that there were good and evil in all people, and it wasn't all white people. This whole mess about racism and all that,
no,
it started with the so-called civil rights movement. They brainwashed the people to think it's a physical thing.
Well, I think it's a trauma thing still.
It is. You hate, it is a trauma.
It's trauma. I
But I didn't grow up with that at all. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. That speak, whoops, I'm sorry. Somebody's ringing my phone.
That's your wife?
Yeah.
Your wife calling?
No.
About to say beta.
We'll put her on. somebody had great heart around you.
Yeah,
Blacks
didn't have that hatred when they were growing. When I was growing, they were more religious. They got married. They had their children under an umbrella of marriage. They knew not to hate because there's even with the Jim Crow laws. You know what they told us?
Yeah.
All white people are not for the Jim Crow laws. This is the government. They made it known to us all white people were not for that, and so they didn't encourage us to hate. They encouraged us to love.
I could see where people would be uncomfortable with that.
And why? I lived
because you
it.
Should have hated it.
No. When you hate it in that you don't hate it, you see what's wrong, you speak up against it, but don't hate it because when you hate it, it overtakes you.
Do you ever read you a become philosopher, subject. You ever read a philosopher named Epictetus?
No. Was he black?
Well, he is now. because you're speaking his tongue. He's a famous Stoic philosopher.
Yeah.
And he talked about slavery. Because he was a slave, and about how to approach it. It sounds very much like what you're
That's
talking
the way to
about.
Do it.
And he empowered himself this way.
Yes. Booker T. Washington, the founder of Tuskegee Institute, was born a slave. His family was sold out, but he knew not to hate.
Get him a copy of the Enchiridion by Epictetus. It's very short. I want you to read it. You'll be stunned how similar it is to your philosophy.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Booker T. the same way. And he founded Tuskegee. He was invited to the White House. This is the 1800s. He was invited to the White House because he did not have that hate. And he was telling black people, don't hate.
Yeah.
But the liberal blacks, they hated him for it. Booker T. W.T. Du Bois and all of them, they wanted him to hate and blame the white man, so they called him Uncle Tom as well. But he had no hate, and he did very well in life.
I don't think Martin Luther King had hate.
No.
I don't think he did.
He did not. Isn't that amazing?
He had no hate, and he had vision.
That's right. And with anger, you have no vision. Mm. You can't. You have no vision, none. So race relations today, especially
all breaks my heart. It all like really hurts.
Especially between the blacks and the whites. How do you? So it breaks your heart. So is this the way to end this mess by telling people it's spiritual and not physical?
Well, that would move it, and I like the idea of right and wrong.
Yes.
We got to move this thing. We're getting stuck,
and I
like the idea of moving it. I mean, that's why I was one of the reasons I was really excited to talk to you.
Thank you.
Because you speak to a population that I think we need to move this thing.
Right.
We need to move it, and me, middle-aged white guy, saying.
But see, I want you to stop that.
I will.
Because the truth has no color.
I will.
And white people have been afraid to tell black people the truth. If you have love, you love all people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you see your fellow man hurting, or woman hurting, You tell them the truth because you want them to get over it, and only the truth can make you free. And so white people shouldn't be saying, oh, I can't do it because I'm white. Black people, those who don't want to hear the truth, they don't want to hear from me either. But those who want to hear the truth, they hear it and they overcome.
But I personally, because it's not my experience, I get the resentment. I get it. And I also think that the trauma issues, which I've begun to see people start to talk about now, the trauma is underlying. There's lots of trauma, and that trauma needs to be healed.
But the trauma starts in the home. It doesn't start out there.
Yeah, but it's transmitted.
Right. Once you're traumatized, then you go.
It's transmitted. Right?
What do you mean transmitted?
It's transmitted from generation to generation.
Yeah, it is transmitted that way, but it starts in the home, and we didn't see that type of trauma when I was growing up in the black community, picking cotton and everything. We had to stay.
Well, I'm going to bet it was still around. It just didn't get
well, you always had evil around, but because we grew up around good, decent people who knew not to hate, speak up, but don't resent, it wasn't passed down to us. Mm. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah, it makes sense.
I wanted to ask you about this. I want to go back a little bit. Mm. Children are taking medication when they go into school now.
Yeah, for overdone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do parents allow that to happen? Because kids are naturally energized, they have a lot of energy.
Well, because we
and they become addicts after that.
No, they don't. That's the good
news.
They become maybe different than they would have been without the medicine. But
I'm dealing with adults who've been taking medication. They were taking Prozac and all that stuff when they first started school, and now they can't come off of it because they can't deal with reality.
Yeah. Well, I can't say it that simply, but I will tell you that when I first started seeing all those psychostimulants being used on kids, I thought, well, of course, no wonder I'm seeing so many amphetamine addicts. So I watched that scientific literature very clearly, very carefully. Right. And that literature is clear. You don't create addicts. In fact, you reduce the addict population if you treat them properly.
Oh, I see.
If you keep treating them after the age of 18, then you get into trouble. So it's about treating them young and properly. Now,
when you say treated, I mean helping to get off the stuff?
I mean treated, meaning selecting the right kids, which is a small number.
I see.
And the other thing I would say, here's my biggest criticism, though. One of the manifestations of childhood trauma in a male is ADHD. So as opposed to going, oh, that's ADHD, why don't we scratch a little under the surface and go, hey, that kid was traumatized, let's work on that.
Right.
And let's give him room to play in the meantime, as opposed to pathologizing him. And let's just say that's a symptom of the trauma, and let's work on the trauma. That's my biggest concern. So now you have traumatized kids, medicated, maybe helps them a little bit, getting into adulthood with still all that trauma in them, bad times.
I totally agree.
Now that's my patients.
Do they listen to you when you tell the world that? Do they say, yeah, you're right, Dr. Drew? They don't, huh?
Because trauma is a hard thing for people to acknowledge, come to terms with, and then manage.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to speak to you today and see the closeness in what we're saying.
Yes.
Because I've often believed that there was a solution on the strictly spiritual side.
Yes.
It's not me. There's also a solution on the medical side, but it's time consuming and not everyone can get it. And it's expensive and all that. So,
right.
So we need to, both of us need to, two prongs. There's probably a third prong out there somewhere we can find.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing. I got to ask you about the thugs.
The thugs?
The NFL thugs.
Oh. Well, I have a bias. Let me tell you my bias. I work with Mr. Kaepernick's girlfriend, Nessa, and she is a lovely person.
Oh,
I had a chance to meet him, and he is an amazing dude. And so it personalizes it when you say, well, that guy wants to make a statement. I'm all, okay. If he wants to make a statement, it's a dude that's a great guy, and I trust him, and he feels it's the right thing to do. Okay. Now, everybody else has picked up on it. I'm not sure my criticism is, And it's, again, I have no business criticism, but what's the end point? What's the plan? This is my thing on most people that are demonstrating or of any type. It's like, how do you know when we've gotten where you want to go? Where do you want to go?
They have no idea.
I'm just angry.
They have no idea.
Yeah, that's the part that bothers me. But I was around the 60s too, right? And it was like, get out of Vietnam now. That was the goal. Civil rights reform. in the federal government right now. Very, very specific goals. Those were the two goals.
Right.
And until we got those goals, guess what? When we got out of Vietnam, demonstration stopped.
Amazing.
Right? We have nothing like that. I don't know what. I don't get it.
They have none.
I would like to hear it. I really would like to hear it. Because I'm sure there's something in there that's probably good, right? Right?
They have no goal. Believe
me. I'm sure they have some good thoughts. Let's hear them.
No, you can't have good thoughts and screw up the NFL.
Well, that's a personal thing for me. Because I like the NFL a lot.
Me too.
And I'm upset. I'm worried they're going to affect the business of the NFL.
They will. They already are.
That bothers me. Yeah. That's trouble.
I'm bothered by it because I love my country. I'm not an African-American. I'm an American. I don't have an Afro. I have an Amerifro. There are no African drums beating in my chest. The American guitar playing in my heart, right? Mm-hmm. Black as the Ace of Spades. If you turn these lights out right now, you only see white teeth. Born on a plantation, raised under the Jim Crow law, but 100% American. And when I see someone at the football game, kneeling during the national anthem, turning their backs on the flag, on the military men and women who have sacrificed their lives and their limbs.
That's hurtful.
And on the fans who pay buku money to go there to relax, have a beer, some popcorn, just entertain me. I don't want to know your politics, your mess. And these people, under the illusion of police brutality, going to do this at a game, making buku money. They make more money than even you're going to make.
Oh, by a long shot. Trust me. Trust me on that.
And so I'm just totally ticked off by that.
But I
take
get,
it to
I get,
the hood.
I get it. But if there was a goal, a specific goal, like get these statistics to here, I'm for it.
But still,
cause
don't
let's
do
get
it at
there.
The game, though.
I know. It bothers. I worry about the NFL. I'm with you.
Yeah, because, you work all week. You know, that rough week.
Well, they're not going to air it now. You're not going to see it.
I know. Isn't that horrible? If I was into...
I sing the national anthem at sporting events. That's one of the things I do for fun.
Yeah. I love that song.
And it's very moving when you do that. It's very...
It sure is, man. But now they want to kill football. They killed the hood. You know, they go into these nice neighborhoods. They destroy the neighborhoods. Black on black. In Chicago... Blacks are killing you in more than two wars.
I don't understand why.
Why don't they go there and do that stuff?
I just the fact that we allow that to go on is it just speaks volumes.
You know why, right? You know why they allow the hood thing to go on and on and on.
I'll just point at the mayor and just go, tell me, what's your good excuse? Yeah, but the mayor.
The mayor's wrong. You're absolutely right. But if the blacks didn't vote him in, or if they voted him out. If they vote in men and women who are going to do work for them and not against them, they would do it because no one is going to treat you any better than you treat yourself.
But you're making a political point, right? About who really is going to help.
Right.
And
first it starts with them.
And look, I drove here through 700 or 800 homeless people. I have the same question about that.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
The hell are you doing? There's people sick on the street. This is a breakdown of civilization.
Yeah.
And you're the mayor. You're the government. What are you thinking?
They don't care because
they don't care
people
because
it's
not,
happen,
it's not
so they
politically
don't
expedient.
That's
they
right.
want what's politically expedient. So.
I gotta ask President Trump. Listening to you and watching you, I know you are a Trumpster.
No, I'm agnostic. I am literally agnostic. I'm not a Trumpster. I'm really
do
not.
Do not tell me this.
It's true. How
can you not be a Trumpster?
Because history is too complicated for me. When I saw him coming on, I did a bunch of shows on HLN, and I was confused. I wasn't horrified. I was just like, what are you guys seeing? What is this you think you're doing here? And I think what I heard was, we're sending in a little dynamite.
That's right.
And I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I just don't know if he's the right guy or not. I just don't know. I know that my favorite president was a maniac, Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, I thought you meant Obama.
No, I liked Obama too. I voted him in, but I like.
Don't tell me that either.
I did.
Okay. Go ahead.
I wasn't super happy with everything he did. I liked him, but Teddy Roosevelt, a total nut. My favorite president. And if he had entered off, even Abraham Lincoln, if you were around then, you would have thought, who is this nut destroying our country? It's the history is too complicated when you're living it. I don't know what the right guy is with the right whatever. I worry about them trying to kick somebody out of office. I think it's terribly destabilizing to our country. Yeah. That's a mistake. But is this the right guy or the wrong guy? He scares me sometimes, but maybe that's what we need right now to do right. that. I don't know. I just don't know.
Take my word. Well, he's the right guy.
Well, is he going to stay in there?
Yes.
Okay.
They can't handle him.
See, what's funny? I look for people to make me feel better because it's very upsetting. The whole thing is upsetting. He's upsetting. You know what I mean? And that's what people are reacting to.
Yeah.
But all I know is it's hubristic. It's narcissistic of me to sit back and go, that's the right guy for this historical moment. I don't know.
All I know is
if I were living during Teddy Roosevelt, I would have been scared. I would have been furious with Abraham Lincoln for killing millions of people. And yet those are my favorite presidents.
when Trump first announced that he was running, and he said, I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall around the borders. I'm going to bring back jobs. I'm going to get rid of these restrictions. I'm going to protect you. I said right then, yes, there is a God. And I knew he would become president. And I've been on cloud nine. I went to cloud nine. Yeah. And I've been dancing on the ceiling ever since.
Well,
I'm glad. What a feeling.
I'm good. I'm good. I've learned to trust you, so yeah. I'm going to go with your sort of feeling about it. I am agnostic. I'm agnostic because I'm way in the middle on everything. I get upset about stuff that hurts people. I'm upset about the homeless thing. Really upset about that. I'm upset about something else you brought up. I feel the NFL thing upsets me. I don't know what to do with that because there's no end point. Because threatening the NFL bothers me. I have a lot of stuff that upsets me, but I don't know
anger has been taken, I don't get upset about anything. I just see injustice.
Well, remember I told you I'm too emotional.
Yeah, right? I got to help you.
So I really get...
Call me later.
Okay. I look to people like you to calm me down. I'll listen to podcasts and stuff going, okay, he's confident. All right, I can feel better.
That's right. We're running out of time, so I got to ask you this because I wanted to hear from you in person.
Yeah.
You, during the 2016 campaign, you said you were gravely concerned about Hillary Clinton's health.
No.
Let me finish because this is what's been said.
I want you to clear it up.
And during your assessment of her health, I know. Once you said that, you were immediately taken off. Was it CNN at the time?
CNN HLN.
Yeah. Okay. Why did I never understood that. So what happened behind the scene that we don't know about?
I'll tell you the whole story top to bottom.
All right.
It's more complicated as always. Okay. And of course, social media made what they made out of it.
Of course.
And it was wrong. In something like August, the powers that be came to me and said, we're canceling your show. That was way before I said anything about Hillary.
Oh.
And I kept it quiet for my staff for a while because we had this dedicated staff. But they were kind of figuring it out. Another 6 weeks, then we told our staff. Another couple weeks, we started sort of getting ready. And I was doing a lot of CNN at the time as we were approaching the election. And I was on Don Lemon the night before. And I did about 10 minutes on Don Lemon's show about exactly what you and I were talking about. Is Donald Trump crazy? Is he manic? Is he narcissistic? And what does that mean? And I was saying exactly what I told you. Like, I don't know what it means. I see all those features, but I see it in Teddy Roosevelt, too.
Right.
And I don't know. I see it. It's there. And I assessed him. But I didn't pass judgment. I just assessed. The next day, I went into radio, and my program director goes, that was really good. Would you do can you condense that to 30 seconds and do it for our website? And I went, okay, I can do that. 30 seconds, and I'm getting up, and he goes, you know, to balance it out, you better say something about Hillary, too. And I go, oh, you know what? Her doctors just released her medical records, and the doctors are screwing up her health care. She's got some really serious stuff, and they're making terrible choices. In fact, I think they're causing some of her health problems. He goes, good, say that on tape. So I took issue with not Hillary's health, which is known to be, she had a stroke, she had a transverse sinus thrombus, she had some really serious stuff. And the doctors were not managing it correctly to my assessment. I'm entitled to make that assessment.
That's right.
That are my peers. And I said, these doctors not doing right. 30 seconds. Okay, I didn't think any of it. I was assessing a record that had been released about my peers' behavior. Not her, but what the doctors care. Drudge report picks up next morning and said, finally a physician on the record saying Hillary's too sick to be president. Which I said, I didn't see anything close to that. Well, CNN came down on me like a ton of bricks at that point.
Wow.
They did come down on me like a ton of bricks.
They yelled at you, sir?
Not in oblique, weird, you know, very weird ways. Magically, you haven't seen me once on CNN since then.
I haven't.
Right. And
I noticed that.
But we had already stopped. And a week later was our stop date for the show, which we had months before decided to stop.
That's amazing.
And so we stopped, and everyone, see, he's off the air because... And I told them, I said, let me go set the record straight. Let me go out and say, this is not because of that. We planned it. And they went, shut up.
Had you said that about President Trump, where they had...
I did it the night before on Don Lemon.
They didn't care about that.
They didn't care.
Amazing.
Think about it. I did it for 10 minutes on their air as opposed to 30 seconds on a radio website.
And so what do you personally think about all that?
That shocked me. There was nothing. I was there for 6 years and nothing like that had ever happened to me over there. They never told me what to say. They never got involved in anything. I was shocked that that's the way they behaved. I really was. And what I was told was essentially, it's a serious time. You're an important person. Don't be partisan. And I was like, I wasn't. Well, and I was like,
You know, we're totally out of time.
Well, let me just say, if that's who they like, I see you now, yes. Right? You know what we're talking about, seeing?
Right.
It's like, okay, well, I don't want to be out there. I don't want to be part
that's
of that.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So I know you have a show called Teams Moms premiering in October.
I do regular, it's been on for 10 years. Regular meetings with these girls. It's a long story.
Okay. One day we have to talk about that.
That's a long
story.
So
quick answers. We'll be out of time.
All right.
What is love?
Love is intimacy. Love is magic. Love is the closeness that co-creates between two people that makes life meaningful.
What is a man?
Man is somebody who steps up.
And the last one, beta or alpha. Are you a beta male or an alpha male?
I don't know what a beta male is, so I guess I'm half alpha. In other words, I'm not aggressive, but I like to lead people.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I can tell you what an alpha male looked like.
Yeah.
The Great White Hope. As you can recognize.
Well, that's alpha. Yeah, that's alpha.
Yeah. My final and last question. Did you have fun?
I did. I did. And it's everything I thought I would get. I got something from you, a lot.
Amazing.
Yeah, a lot.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Don't forget to like, follow, tweet, subscribe, Patreon, T-shirts, and all that stuff. And we really appreciate it.
Next time on The Fallen State.
So when you were growing up, the black kids or the white kids didn't know if you were black or white?
Yeah, they were often asked, like, Elliot, what are you?
Were you hated by the blacks because you look white?
The kids, yes. The majority of black boys, there would be those that just didn't like me, you know, that wanted to fight me. I couldn't figure out why. The white kids never really picked on me or bothered me. The parents, the girls that I used to like to date, they disapproved.
Was it hard on you?
Yeah, I struggled with knowing who I am.
It's been 2 years and there's no collusion. FBI has taken a bruising. All the liars in the deep state trying to protect their big mistake. You see, they wiretapped the president and his people with no evidence. Russian dossier was totally fake. And now they're gonna face a big heartbreak.
Impeach 45. Impeach 45.
You have got to be kidding me. Impeach 45 is Mad Maxine's disgrace. No blue wave, just a red tsunami. That's what's up with the booming economy.
Thanks for watching The Fallen State. We need your continued support. Donate to my nonprofit here. Subscribe and like the videos here. And tell everybody and their mama about the show.